Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in 2019, January 2nd. I am Doug Kazarian. We are taping this on Wednesday. Kai, Happy New Year, bud.
Happy New Year, my man.
What a week in sports the last week. We had some craziness in college football we will discuss with Mr. Director John Murray. He's going to join us, and we'll also talk NFL, recap Week 17, and look ahead to Wild Card Weekend. Kai, Giants were involved, very involved in the bonanza in my Sports Center pick,
yeah.
And the one time we wanted them to win, they did not.
You know, that's the mystique and the beauty of the Giants. They never do what you expect or want them to do. Rebel.
No, they don't. And just a crazy game there with Jason Garrett playing a little possum, and then the heroics of Cole Beasley and Dak Prescott on 4th and 15. And
yeah,
we're going to look ahead and just a wild college bowl season and some stats I'm going to share coming up with John Murray. And big upset with Texas over Georgia last night. We'll also recap the national semifinal game, look ahead to Clemson, Alabama, a matchup we've been talking about for a couple months now, and we will finally get on Monday, and then look ahead to the playoff weekend. Some really strong matchups, very good things coming up. But I'm excited, man. No Phil Steele here, so we'll talk all college with John Murray. But so, Kai, you went home to Jersey, right?
Yeah, went home to Jersey, brought in a new year quietly at the house. Of course, watched a lot of the games this weekend. For those of you that even cared about my Confessions of a Non-Gambler pick of the week, just act like you never even heard that, because
what was it again? I forgot.
It was Notre Dame to win outright, and was just a square dog, as you say.
It ended up becoming one when we taped on the pod. Even when I did a SportsCenter hit Saturday morning, I did not get the bat signal. Later in the day, I got the bat signal from Murray saying this is one of the biggest square dogs I've ever seen. So we'll talk about it. I think there was a way Notre Dame covered. I actually think the first quarter played out pretty well for them. They just left points on the board, and it could have been a different game. But Clemson eventually rolled them. So we'll get into all that straight ahead with John Murray.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Boy, is it. And New Year's Day, you know, 2018, we thought we learned a few things, and here we are in the very first day of 2019, Mr. Director, and coaches are continuing to make these mistakes.
Yeah, I was rooting for Kentucky yesterday against Penn State. I loved it every time James Franklin brought out the kicking team, because A, kicking is for losers, and B, the kicker they had wasn't any good. And then it was especially funny when they were down 27-21 and they had all the momentum in the world, and they brought out the kicker, and he made a field goal to cut it to 27-24, but by the time they got the ball back, there was only, I think, 10 seconds left in the game.
I wish it was only that one game where we saw kicking is for losers.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
It cast in the spotlight. I actually put out a Twitter poll, got 1,000 votes.
Wow.
And what was the dumbest kicking decision today, meaning New Year's Day? But we had one also in the national semifinal game with Clemson and Oklahoma and Alabama. But so Mississippi State punted on 4th and inches, right?
I saw that. I laughed at it.
They lost the game, shockingly. So to your point, James Franklin, that was the winning. That was 50% of the three options. That was the winner of this poll. And so it was down 6 with about 4 minutes to go, and he on a 4th and 6, and he kicked.
Yes. And his kicker had been really bad during the game. I think you got to consider that, too.
Sure.
It's not like it was a slam dunk that the kid was going to make the field goal anyway. Of course, James Franklin should have gone for that. It was a terrible decision. I thought the Mississippi State guy was actually even worse because he also kicked a field goal down close to the end zone in addition to that punt that you mentioned in your poll. So I thought I made a mental note that the Mississippi State coach likes to kick, and I'm going to remember that next year.
Yeah, Joe Moorhead. So the Penn State thing is fascinating because people are like, oh, you take the points, make it a field goal game, you have to do three timeouts, turn it over to your defense. It's like, hey, if you want to trust your defense, then that's the reason to go for it.
Sure.
Because if you don't get it,
the game is over.
Correct.
All those things that you're saying are still in place. Right. If you still have your three timeouts, you're still trusting your defense, of course you need to go for that. And it's still only a six-point game. It's a terrible decision. The only way you could justify kicking there is if it was like a 10-point game where you needed both the field goal and the touchdown.
Right.
Then I don't have as much of a problem with it. But certainly when it's a 6-point game, of course you should go for the touchdown, especially with the way their offense had been moving the ball in the fourth quarter.
Or like if you're down 7, you still need the touchdown. You have to go for it. 6 is what made them, I don't know. It was just not the right decision. But I voted for Washington in the Rose Bowl, Chris Peterson, because the cherry on top is he called the timeout before it and then punted. It's like,
yeah, that was awesome.
It's not like
he called timeout to strategize and then punted.
He said he kept his offense out there, then called timeout.
Yeah,
and it's like, dude, just take the delay of game, whatever. But
if you're going to punt anyway, just take the delay of game penalty. I agree with that.
I think they did complete a pass on third down, so I think the clock was moving, but. Either way, it's not like it went from first down to fourth down. It didn't sneak up on you. Like, you have to have it in the back of your head what you're going to do as a head coach. I mean, I know you got other things, but that's – you cannot start making the decision after third down ends, right? And then on top of that –
oh, absolutely not. No.
So with, like, what was it, 5 minutes to go, they made the decision to punt, and you're down 11, okay? So what's fascinating to me in all these situations – is that they always assume the 2-point conversion is good. Like you may need 2 touchdowns, right? Like, you may not get that 2-point conversion. So you punt, and so you're essentially saying, with that much time left and punting and turning it over to your defense and whatever, you're basically saying it's more likely that I recover an onside kick, which ultimately it came down to, than it is that I convert this 4th and 6. Because if you convert the 4th and 6.
Which is ridiculous.
I know. It's ridiculous. Because then maybe you score with 3 minutes to go. I mean, look what happened. They moved the ball, like, I think it was like 67 yards in 2 plays when they got the ball back after stopping Ohio State, which bailed them out on throwing on 2nd down and incomplete. But it's just so stupid. And it goes back to what I said at the time that I'd heard from Kate Fagan, colleague at ESPN. It's about the hostage. Yeah, the hostage situation. Get in the van or run. Like, you have to.
I love that. I love that analogy. It's genius.
It is.
Kate
brilliant.
Fagan is a genius for that. That analogy.
It's fantastic. It's dictate the terms. Like, your percentage play is now not stay in the game.
I don't understand it at all. And you know what else I don't understand? After Penn State kicked the field goal, Kentucky gets the ball back, and James Franklin sat on his timeouts until the very end. I don't know if you noticed that, but I would always just start using my timeouts right away. What if Kentucky fumbled on the first play or the second play of the drive? Wouldn't you want to have the maximum amount of time still left on the clock? I don't understand what he thought he was saving his timeouts for. James Franklin totally botched the end of that end of that game.
And it's not the first time, obviously, that Ohio State game, play calling come into question.
I mean, the Ohio State game, he blew that one, and you know, I can't criticize Chris Peterson too much, DK, because that rally by the Huskies saved us quite a bit of money. That was a big swing for us that they managed to get it within the number. There were some people that laid 4.5 or 5, but the majority of the money was in their bigger numbers, and that was a really big swing for us here at the Superbook. A lot of money on the Rose Bowl game for sure.
Well, that's what I was going to go to next, is huge point spread hijinks at the very end of the game, 2-point conversion as well, and you almost had a pick 2, and frankly, it should have been because Jake Browning was falling down, and the defender decided to cut back inside instead of just hugging the sideline. If he hugs the sideline, he's gone, and the outcome's 7.
Those are fun plays because no matter where the guy intercepts the ball at, and that interception was at the back of the end zone, there's no reason to not bring it out. It's not like a touchback. So the guy just brings it out, and it's like, oh, no, here we go. And the whole crowd here in the book just rose to their feet in unison to see if this thing was going to land seven. That was certainly a crazy game here at the in the middle of the day. The only game we really lost on yesterday was the Fiesta Bowl. LSU beat Central Florida by 8 in the Fiesta Bowl. We did well in the other four games, very well on the Rose and the Sugar Bowls.
So I heard some grumblings that the Rose Bowl had bigger handle than the College Football Playoff and National Semifinal games.
I heard that that was the case at some other places. It was not the case at our book. We had more money on the two playoff games than the Rose Bowl. But the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl were both very good handle games, as was the Fiesta Bowl. That was a good handle game, too.
And how about that Fiesta Bowl?
That was a very impressive performance by Texas. Tom Herman is just such a good coach. If you think about how much of a mess that program was when he got there, I think 2 years ago, for him to get them to the Sugar Bowl and win it, very impressive. I said after they lost to Maryland the first week of the year that they shouldn't panic too much because I really believe in Tom Herman. And I don't know how anybody could say this season wasn't a big success for Texas football.
Huge success. They beat Oklahoma, obviously, during the regular season, lost in the Big 12 title game, but I think they found their quarterback, too. Sam Ellinger, I wasn't 100% sold on him as a personal, just football fan, but obviously last night showed me a lot. I will say this. Teams that finish fifth in the College Football Playoff final poll, so basically first team out of the national semifinals, and we question motivation, now 1-5 in their bowl game. So, you know.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it, how I like Texas. I liked Texas right when the numbers came out because I thought maybe Georgia wouldn't be motivated. And then it ended up happening where the number came down to about 11.5, 12, and we saw some really sharp groups lay the points with Georgia, and it kind of scared me off of it. But certainly Texas was the right side there. And I don't want to be one of these people saying, oh, Georgia didn't care, but it certainly looked like Georgia wasn't fully motivated for that game the way they would have been if they'd been in the College Football Playoff. But I don't want to take any credit away from Texas because that's not fair to them.
Well, and both things can be right. Like, Georgia cannot have been ready. And I think a lot of the time when it's like not caring, it's not so much like game day. It's the weeks leading up, right? And then if you listen to the broadcast, Holly Rowe was saying that sometimes that Kirby Smart was worried that players weren't focusing during practice. I mean, I think it's all about preparation as well. And with that being said, there's many different outcomes to a game. It's not just who won or lost, but it's margin of victory. So I think if Georgia maybe focuses more, it's a closer game, but I'm not saying Texas doesn't necessarily win, right? Like, give Texas credit, to your point. And it's not as maybe lopsided from the beginning. Because clearly it was one team was fired up, including Bevo going after Uga.
I saw that, and you got to give a lot of credit too. I mentioned Tom Herman. Don't forget about their D coordinator. I think his name's Todd Orlando.
Yep.
He did an outstanding job of just shutting down the Georgia run game. Georgia's running game has been so productive all season. So a lot of credit goes to Todd Orlando and the defensive staff for the Longhorns. It was just a very impressive performance by them, and they certainly look like a team that could be in the College Football Playoff next year. I can't imagine Oklahoma is going to trot out a third straight Heisman Trophy winning quarterback.
You never know. So, you never know with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, you never know with Lincoln Riley, but I was impressed with that. I really enjoyed the Fiesta Bowl. That was a game that we had a lot of money on. We had a gentleman come up and laid $50,000 on LSU minus 7 yesterday morning, and we had a lot of money on actually both sides of that game, and I thought it was an interesting game. I thought any criticisms of Central Florida for being like – supposedly dominated in that game were a little bit unfair because they were without their starting quarterback. Let's not forget about that. They didn't have Mackenzie Milton. So considering that they were down to their number two QB, I thought they did a pretty good job of hanging in with an LSU team that I think we can all agree was one of the most talented teams in the country this year.
Yeah, LSU was missing a lot of guys too, whether it be for the NFL draft, injuries, and then targeting fouls during the game.
Thrown out of the game, yeah. That's true. They were missing a lot of guys because some of them got ejected from the football game. But, no, the point is still valid.
My whole thing with Central Florida, and I've maintained that they did not belong in the National Final Four last year and this year, and I think we need to remember what happened with Florida State, the last year of Jameis Winston when they were undefeated but, like, losing at halftime in a few of those games and didn't look polished and didn't look like one of the four best teams, that even when they were undefeated entering the college football playoff, even when they were undefeated, they were behind one-loss teams in the rankings, and the committee looks at everything. And if you listen to Heather Dinich this year, after the final rankings were released and Ohio State did not make the Final Four, is that it was the Purdue loss, and that was a bad loss, but it was also their performance in other games, like going to multiple overtimes with Maryland. So my thing with Central Florida, if you do not have a regular Power 5 schedule, you have to hammer the teams in your conference. They almost lost to Memphis twice this year. Like, that stood out to me essentially just as bad as a loss in the framework of discussing and splitting hairs as the four best teams in the country. Like, that's my thing. Last year's team had a better resume, so to speak, but they still give up 600 yards to South Florida and all those kind of things. Now, I get it. The object is to win, but we're not – like, we're evolved enough to realize that not all records are created equal. There's more to this. And if you have a weak schedule, you have to hammer teams.
Going undefeated against Central Florida's schedule is not as impressive to me as LSU only losing two games against its schedule. LSU played a brutal schedule this year. Central Florida would have never gone 10-2 against the schedule LSU played. And I'd like to slam the door completely on the whole debate about who else should have been in the playoff, because I got news for everybody. It didn't make any difference.
Nope.
Alabama and Clemson were head and shoulders above the third best, fourth best, fifth best teams in the country this year. They are clearly the two best teams in the country. They're two of the best teams we've seen in the last 10 years of college football, and they're playing each other on Monday for the national championship. So what is everybody complaining about? We got the result that we wanted. We got the two best teams. They're going head-to-head for the national championship, and that's all that matters.
That's the thing, and every year is different too, right? Like the first year of the playoff, I think it was more wide open, right? Those four teams all had a legit case. In fact, the four seed ended up winning it all with Ohio State with a third-string quarterback in Cardale Jones.
Yeah.
I think TCU was right there, and even Baylor was right there. So that was a unique year, and that six teams, I think, could have all won it all. This year, I think those two are the only teams that could have won it all. Now, Georgia demonstrated it could, but Georgia played one good half of football. That's it. And let's not forget, Tua hurt his ankle, not the one he ended up leaving the game with and having surgery on, his other ankle in the first quarter. So that caught him a break. And look, you know, if my life depended on it, I would think Georgia's one of the four best teams, but that's only because of what they did on paper. Their best win is either Florida or Kentucky, okay? They did execute. Now, on paper, they're there, but, like, you have to execute. Like, for example, last night, Jake Fromm missed a few throws that would have been touchdowns. Like, you have to, at some point, win on the field. And that was my beef with, like, yes, while I agree that the power rating of Georgia's higher, at some point, the outcomes have to matter. So Georgia had a leg to stand on, so to speak, to your point, like, you know, in terms of the two best teams, but they never, like, got it done.
No, they didn't. And from what I saw this weekend, not just in Georgia's game, but in Clemson and Alabama's two games, I don't think Georgia could have beat Clemson or Alabama in the college football playoff. I will say this, though. Alabama really took their foot off the gas against Oklahoma. I mean, if that game had had another quarter or two, it would have been very interesting.
Right.
Because Alabama was just not impressive in the second half. I may have tweeted about it, too. I didn't like Alabama. They punted on 4th and 10 on Oklahoma's side of the field. I would have just gone for that. They punted it away, and then Oklahoma just went right down the field for a touchdown. Yeah, I think at Alabama, in a game like that, you're really doing the other team a favor by punting and kicking field goals. I know Lincoln Riley, I think, kicked two field goals in the first half of that game. Or was it – he made it like 31 to –
it was in the second half.
It was the second half. What is Lincoln Riley doing kicking field goals, man? I mean, Alabama's offense is so good. You can't be kicking field goals if you're Oklahoma. You can't be trading touchdowns for field goals. And Lincoln Riley got very conservative in overtime of the national semifinal last season. And he kicked a field goal, I think, in both the first and second overtime sessions of their loss to Georgia. So as great of a play caller as he clearly is, and no one would ever argue with that, I'm not so sure about his game management in some of these situations in terms of when you, especially his offense, may be the most explosive in the country. So if anybody should be going forward on 4th and medium, it should be him.
Yeah, I think that's where, like, honestly, inexperience and youth comes into play. I think those are the key things when you're in that situation, and there's tons and tons of pressure. It is easy for you and I to sit here. But then again, like,
oh, for sure.
It's not. Like, it's pretty basic stuff. Like, we talked about it at the beginning of the podcast with some of these coaching decisions from New Year's Day. And you're right. When you're down that, you kind of have to make those tough decisions. It is the hostage situation. Like, you have, like, the end of the game should not dictate the outcome necessarily. Like, sometimes the math says the game's going to be decided on this play, the fourth down, fourth and 10 or fourth and six. You have to go for it rather than kick. And maybe, I don't know, there was, you can spin it out. Hey, maybe Tua throws a pick. He tends to force the ball a little bit more and take, you get some, maybe you get a tip, maybe you get a fumble. But you're right. Like, he learned in that Georgia game in the Rose Bowl. They took their foot off the gas last year. Now, I know Baker Mayfield was sick. I believe he was battling bronchitis. But at some point, you have to, again, trust your stuff. And like you said, the offense is their strength.
My biggest problem, it was just the way he kicked those field goals in overtime on fourth and shorts. Believe me, the Georgia fans and the Georgia coaching staff were happy to see him bring out the field goal team rather than leave Baker Mayfield in there. And I think the same is true on Saturday.
The Alabama stat. Oh, you're saying semifinal. Last year. Okay.
Well, I'm talking about last year. And I'm saying also this year, I think that the Alabama fans should have been happy to see Kyler Murray go into the sidelines, so Oklahoma can kick a field goal in that game too. I completely disagree with Riley's decisions to kick those field goals instead of leaving his literally Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks on the field and asking them to pick up first downs for him.
It is remarkable. How did the house do on that game and also the Notre Dame-Clemson game?
Did great on Notre Dame-Clemson. As you know, we talked about it a little bit Saturday. Everybody was on Notre Dame. That was you like to call it a square dog, and that's exactly what it was. It was a square play that everybody was betting, and the money line especially. Everybody was pounding Notre Dame money line. Maybe the result could have been different. That there was that kickoff that looked like it stayed in bounds and Notre Dame had recovered. Maybe could have been a different result if Notre Dame had gotten the ball there and scored. But I just think Clemson was so much better than Notre Dame that it was inevitable that Clemson would have pulled away from them. The second game was good, too. It was not as good as the first game, but it was another it's a very solid result for us.
Couple things. I'm glad you mentioned the kickoff because, look, you had the bat signal, it was the square dog. Last minute, I did jump on Clemson. And, well, that's why I have smart people in my Rolodex like yourself. But I will say this, the game did not feel as lopsided as the score indicates. I think Notre Dame had their chances in the first quarter. Missed field goal, I believe, but also just Ian Book missed a guy in the end zone on a post, underthrew it, and then it was tipped away. The fumble, like you said, just had all these opportunities. And I believe it was Blackledge on the call. I'm not 100% sure, but it was basically saying that Notre Dame had a chance in that game, but the margin of error is much smaller when you are a double-digit underdog. And that was their opportunity right there when the margin of error, and they did not execute. And then the game got away from them. Then obviously some big throws from Lawrence, especially right before half. But there were a lot of, like, big plays that Clemson executed perfectly. Like, to your point, probably down as the game wore on, if it was closer, they would have pulled away. But I don't think it was as embarrassing for Notre Dame as we've seen in years past of other Notre Dame performances.
Well, it was certainly nowhere near the embarrassment that Alabama game was in the championship game 6 years ago. That was a much more one-sided affair. But Clemson's just got some playmakers on offense. Trevor Lawrence is really coming into his own. I mean, it's already obvious that he's going to be the first overall pick in the draft when he can finally go to the draft. He'd be the first overall pick in this coming draft if he was eligible for it, but he's not. Certainly he'll be someday a very high draft choice in the NFL. And look at the receivers Clemson has, too. That Justin Ross kid is unbelievable. He's a freshman from Alabama.
I know.
How did Alabama and Auburn let that kid get away? That guy's awesome. The running back, Etienne, he's a great player. They've got studs all over the defense. Good offensive line. Alabama can match up with Oklahoma physically, and that just isn't true of really anybody else in the country, if we're being honest.
Clemson can match up with Alabama.
Oh, excuse me. Well, it's both are true.
But
Clemson can match up with Alabama, and that's the more controversial opinion than saying Alabama can match up with them, huh? But, yeah, Clemson, they have the athletes. They can match up with Alabama. They really can, and I think this line is too high. I said it right when we said it on Saturday night. We were talking about what to make it. I mean, I think this number should be 3.5, 4 at the most. I think 6, 6.5, which some books had up, is way too high.
Well, let's talk about that. I'm glad you segued there because that's the one game remaining in the college football season, yeah. Although we do have Eastern Washington, North Dakota State on the 5th.
Oh, yeah.
But so you guys put an advance line on a hypothetical situation because when it looked like Clemson and Alabama were on a collision course to meet in the national championship game, you wanted to get some buzz and some handle out there. You had the line originally, the opener was what, 8?
I think we opened, I'm pretty sure about it, too, 8.5.
8.5, okay.
The first number. We took some money plus 8.5. At the time, Alabama was considered just unbeatable. I'm sure you remember those days.
That was prior to the Citadel.
Yeah, that was prior to the struggle against the Citadel. And Alabama, of course, was life and death to beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. And I thought that they, obviously, they looked incredibly impressive at the start of the Orange Bowl, but they really did not look that good in the second half. I think that there's more of an opinion out there now that Clemson has a chance to win this game. And it's what I've thought all along. I've thought all along that Clemson had the ability to match up with Alabama.
Right. But I'm interested, though, as an odds maker, knowing it's a high-profile island game, as you like to call, you would have put up 4.5 knowing that the world tends
Alabama,
right?
You don't need to get that far out of market. Like right now, we've been staying low the whole time. We were at 5.5 when everybody was at 6. Now everybody's going to 5.5. I see 5 in some faraway places. We've been trying to stay a little low on it. But we don't want to get too crazy. We've already written a lot of money on Alabama here. But I'm pretty sure that when this thing kicks off on Monday night, we're going to have a decent-sized need on Clemson here.
What do the sharps weighed in on?
Nothing really yet from the top college football groups, the guys that we've seen all year, the guys that have been very successful betting with us all year, frankly, in college football. Haven't seen anything from any of those groups yet for this national championship game.
What about the trusted computer? Remember, I was so fascinated in the NBA Finals when you guys had to be stay on market with the series price, but it was, what was it, like -1 to 50 in favor of the Cavaliers, favor of the Warriors over the Cavs, but you guys had to stay on market with whatever the series price was, 1,100?
Yeah, 1 to 50 was being nice, too. The Cavaliers had no chance in that series. But no, we just, this number was really kind of easy to make. Because we've been talking about it all year. You know, it's not like it caught us off guard that Clemson and Alabama are playing for the national championship. I know after the Clemson game, I had a guy reach out to me, and he asked me what we were going to open Alabama-Clemson at, and I told him what I thought it would be, and then he asked me what we would make Clemson-Oklahoma. And he kind of caught me off guard, and I was like, honestly, we haven't even had that conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we never even had one conversation about what it would be, Alabama-Notre Dame, Clemson-Oklahoma. The only thing we ever talked about was Clemson-Alabama. And we were all in relatively the same ballpark. We opened it a little lower than some of the other books did because we lean towards Clemson. But we're not going to get too crazy with it. We already have a pretty big need on Clemson just right now, and it's only Wednesday. You can imagine how much money we're going to write on this game.
You know what's funny in these situations, and there are people who listening to this podcast are nerds like you and I in terms of the sports betting nuances, but you have to, like, if the line for Clemson-Oklahoma, if they had to meet in the national semifinal game, would be very different than if they had to meet in the national championship game because the Sooners would be coming off a big upset over Alabama, obviously. Kyler Murray would have played great in order to win that game, so the perception of Oklahoma would be so much different if they met in the final than in the national semifinal game.
I agree with you, but can I get a definition and a further explanation of sports betting nerd? Like, what kind of individual are we talking about here? Like the guy.
Guy, can we go to the bullpen on this one?
Nerd alert!
We need you, Kai. Is it like the guys on? To me, the sports betting nerd are like the guys on Twitter that just sit there all day trolling people.
Yeah, no,
like
that's
a sad existence.
That's
I feel.
Loser.
Those are those are
that'd be a sad way to go through your life, I think.
Those are the those are just nerds, like in general. Those are just
they're just nerds.
They're separate.
So
words.
It's a difference between a sports betting nerd and just a nerd. like a Revenge of the Nerds nerd?
I think it's a term of endearment, actually. It sounds like, you know, you should champion being a sports nerd.
Right. We talked about it with Mike Clay a lot. Like, I usually use that term as affectionate. Like, I call myself sometimes a nerd in that regard, in this case, a sports betting nerd. But I just think the finer points, anytime you're talking about the finer points and you're stimulated by it, I think that would be the umbrella.
I'm stimulated by all this Alabama-Clemson talk. I can't lie. I'm very excited for this game. You guys know how highly rated I've thought of Clemson all year and how I thought that they were historically a good team, even though they weren't considered the best team in the country. So to get a chance to see these two teams go head-to-head is very exciting to me.
Yeah, it should be great. And to your point about if Oklahoma was on the comeback, we saw that with the Clemson game when Deshaun Watson pulled it off. It's like the volume of plays, like basically Alabama was getting tired, right? And
yeah,
just the tempo offense. And I think that's why Oklahoma deferred on the kickoff to the second half, thinking they had a better chance to score, you know, just in terms of the game plan, the concept of just, and maybe that's why Lincoln Riley opted for field goals, like hanging around, thinking that you can get to them in the fourth quarter, because that's sort of what Clemson did in previous years. But again, this is all speculation in that regard.
That's possible. I just don't agree with him. I think he was doing Alabama a favor by pulling Kyler Murray off the field and bringing out his field goal kicker. I think that's what Alabama wanted him to do. That's what I would have wanted if I had been Alabama in that scenario.
And what do I always say? I've been saying it for years. What does the other team want you to do? Do the opposite. Sure. It's just very simple in that regard. I will say this. So Oklahoma gets the cover. The over-under and the side came into play inside the 10-yard line until victory formation, which is interesting because I think during the regular season, Alabama might run a couple plays with their third stringers or something like that. I know it's a two-possession game and not a four-possession game, but that was interesting to me. And I will say so with the Sooners cover, you know that only 6 of the 38 bowls, the point spread mattered?
Is that right?
So the underdog lost but covered. Otherwise, either the underdog won outright or the favorite covered. So 6 of 38, and it was 3 of the first 28, I believe, and then 3 of the next 10. So it just
I was actually out at a local bar watching the game and the UFC fights simultaneously. Huge Alabama contingent screaming at the TVs over every call. I'd forgotten that people are like that. There'd be like a blatant penalty on Alabama, and they'd call it, and the Alabama fans would just be screaming at the TV. And I was thinking to myself, like, what the heck is this guy talking about?
Well,
but interesting. I was with VSiN's own Sam Paniatovich, and how about this? ESPN's Ben Fox was there with us as well.
Ah, yeah, he made the trek out there. All right.
Yeah, we were watching a game, and certainly the play that you referenced, it could have been a touchdown for Alabama that would have given Alabama the cover and put the game over. So that was a very dramatic end there for people with bets on the game, which most of us in Las Vegas did have.
I gave out two plays on SportsCenter. One was Tua over 2.5 touchdown passes. That hit. And the other one was the team total that I'd been talking about on this podcast for a couple weeks, discussed it with Phil Steele. And, you know, the touchdown at the end of the first half, they called a formation penalty. Alabama has done these kind of things, or stupid penalties, 4th and inches. They had a false start, just stuff like that. It burned me in the Missouri game. So I was pretty annoyed to lose that bet.
We got to 2.5 again this week, but I think certainly a much better defense he'll be facing on Monday than the one he played on Saturday.
Well, that's kind of to my point. Like, I thought 2.5 was really low against an Oklahoma defense.
All I can say is Ed Sammons and I had an argument about that last week, and I was on your side. I'm going to leave it at that because I know Ed's going to listen to this show, and I don't want to get into a whole thing with him. But Ed and I certainly disagreed on the Tua touchdown number in the Oklahoma game. That's all I got to say.
I saw some offshore props, 3.5 in that game, but heavy, heavy plus money on the over. So
right. Yeah, of course. But, you know, I told him at the time I thought 4 was a more likely number than 2. That was all I said. I thought 4 was more likely than 2. I just didn't see Oklahoma stopping Alabama at all. Oklahoma actually stopped them a couple times in the second half. So maybe he was right.
I thought the defense just played well. I even said that in the first half when it was one-sided.
Yeah.
I was like, they're actually playing better than I thought.
I thought Alabama was going to be able to just name the score in that game. And Oklahoma,
at least on offense.
Credit,
at least
on
offense, right?
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah. But you got to give Oklahoma credit. They hung in there. They covered the spread. They made it a game in the second half. So I was actually impressed with Oklahoma in a loss. And it made me believe that it made me believe even more that Clemson can win this game on Monday.
Yeah, I was impressed with Oklahoma's defense, even the first half, because the offense was going three and out. And I just thought their defense was playing hard, whereas in other games, I just saw guys running wide open, against that defense. And I thought Tua was making throws. I mean, he made a couple sweet throws. It wasn't just dudes running wide open. In last year's Rose Bowl, Georgia could just run. They're ripping off like 11-yard carries. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that was able to be the case this year. I thought like it was a much more competitive defense, even when it was a one-sided score.
I'm with you. I thought Alabama, and that was really why Ed was advocating for the lower number on that prop, that touchdown prop by Tua, was because Ed, and I agreed with him, thought that Alabama was going to be able to run the ball at will, and maybe he wouldn't need to throw for those touchdowns. That made sense to me. I still thought 2.5 was too low, but I couldn't disagree with his thinking that Alabama would just be running wild in the game. I didn't, and really, Oklahoma did a reasonably good job stopping them.
So a high-profile game coming up Monday. Very excited for that, and literally the game America deserves. Clemson, Alabama,
yeah,
no doubt. So let's table that discussion until next week when we recap the national championship game and talk about all the other things we love with that. But it's now time for the NFL. Week 17, some craziness in some parts. We'll get to the bonanza, but the New York Giants, what on earth happened there? What was Jason Garrett doing with the Cowboys?
I have no idea. I don't know what to say. I don't understand. So the last touchdown that Dallas scored, I think it was Cole Beasley made the catch. So he got one knee in bounds. One knee equals 2 feet.
Yeah. It was an amazing catch.
I don't understand.
Kai, how do you feel about that?
I just want some clarity on it because, I don't know, some people that I was watching the game with were saying that one knee equals 2 feet. I'd never heard that before.
Oh, that's
one butt cheek equals 2 feet.
Oh, that's been
that.
An old adage. I think John Madden was the one who coined that one. That's and it's like, I think a hand as well. Like if you just put like a left hand, I think that's good too, like left elbow.
Okay.
What if you landed right on your head? Does one head equal 2 feet?
Yes, it does.
Okay. It was just a confusing rule. It was certainly not as confusing as the decision by Jason Garrett to play all of his starters the whole game other than Ezekiel Elliott. I thought that was a very poor decision by Garrett personally. I saw Leighton Vander Esch limped off the field a little bit. I think one of their offensive linemen got hurt. You've got a game against Seattle coming up this week. They knew they were going to be the 4 seed and almost definitely against the Seahawks. I don't know what he's doing leaving all of his guys in the game like that.
I will say this. In the past, we've seen a lot of teams sort of treat it like an on-off switch. And that hasn't always worked either. You know, we've seen 1 seeds take it easy and then they have 2 weeks off, right, essentially with the bye week. So I understand the thought process, at least. I understand at least why it's a discussion. But then ultimately, I personally would opt to rest the key players. But I do see the benefit. Let me just put it that way. I do see the benefit of playing your guys and treating it and trying to maintain momentum into the playoffs.
I really whiffed on my pick for Musburger. I gave him the Vikings because I didn't believe the Bears would go all out either. And the Bears certainly surprised me. And I thought the Bears were making a mistake. I thought they would have been better off playing the Vikings than playing the Eagles. Then Nick Foles got dinged up, and maybe that will work out well for them. But based on what I saw the last few weeks, I'd much rather play Minnesota than Philadelphia in a playoff game.
Isn't that funny? Kirk Cousins gets all that money, and you're more worried about Foles than Cousins?
Yeah, at this point, I think you have to be. You know, Kirk Cousins had a terrible performance on Sunday against Chicago. And, you know, 2 years ago, the Redskins, all they needed to do was beat the Giants on the last Sunday of the season. The Giants had already clinched their playoff position. It was a game at the Redskins, and the Redskins were nearly a 10-point favorite. And Kirk was terrible in that game, too, and he lost that game. So, you know, Kirk has certainly shown that when it's all on the line, even when the other team doesn't have anything to play for, he still can't come through.
I don't know, man. I whiffed on that as well. I gave out two picks on SportsCenter. Vikings were one, and the Giants minus 6.5 was another. So 4th and 15 burns me.
Ugh,
I know. That was brutal. It's just because I considered the Bills as well, right? That was another one. I did like the Seahawks, too. I will say that. So that maybe that's a wash there. But very frustrating. And I was all in on Minnesota the last couple of weeks, so they've treated me well in that regard. But, yeah, just a wild week 17. How did you guys do all in all?
Well, the games were – we won a little bit. It wasn't anything major. But it was the season-long stuff we did so well. I mean, I know it's been talked about at length, but the Vikings not making the playoffs was huge for us. We had a guy bet – $240,000 on the Vikings to make the playoffs back in May. And because of the Bears beating the Vikings and the Eagles beating the Redskins, the Redskins are a disaster, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
We were able to get that. Also, the Ravens winning the AFC North, that was a big win for us, too. That was our biggest division win of the year this season. The Denver Broncos, they lost to the Chargers on Sunday, so they finished at 6 wins. They went under the number of 7. That was a huge win for us here. Really, the only thing we lost on Sunday in terms of season-long stuff was the Bills, who you just mentioned. They got their 6th win. Very, very impressive close to the year by the Buffalo Bills. They finished 6-10. We needed them to go under 5.5 for a big decision. But we can't complain. The results were very good for us on Sunday.
How about the line movement? I know the Week 17 lines are very elastic. Like, we saw the Giants go from -3 to -7. What about the line? Were they sharp moves? Or end up being sharp moves?
Well, certainly the money that came in on the Bills was sharp money.
Right.
Bills with a blowout win over Miami that we just talked about. Josh Allen accounted for 5 touchdowns in that game. Miami looked like a team that just didn't want to be there. But I got to give credit to Buffalo for that win. It was a very good win. The Vikings were a team that saw a lot of money too, guys. I mean, that, you know, I mentioned I liked it at 4.5 on this show. It actually got up to 6. And then the Vikings just no-showed there. And you mentioned the Giants, too. That's a number that went way up. I think we closed 7.5 on the Giants Sunday morning, and they lost the game outright. So really, it was just like any other week of the NFL, where the Sharps got some right and they got some wrong.
Right. I just always fascinated by Week 17, much like I am
sure.
Preseason. One thing to keep in mind, teams that lose Week 17 struggle against the number in the playoffs. So the playoff teams that lose Week 17 5-11 last 5 years in their postseason opener, but the Saints are the only team that lost Week 17 that's headed to the postseason, and we'll have to.
And the Saints, I don't think the Saints were treating it like they treated it like I would have treated it, where they just didn't seem to care at all. They've got much bigger goals in mind than beating the Panthers in Week 17.
Yeah, with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. So
let's
go to the weekend, and I'm actually very fascinated by these because anytime there is a NFL home team, especially in the playoffs, that is laying like 1.5 or 2 or 2.5 instead of the full 3, mm-hmm. My spidey sense goes off on the underdog.
Well, you're going to like what I have to say this because you know that. Like I don't normally have too many strong opinions on NFL games. I think you guys know that. But I actually really like 2 of the games this week. And I really like Clemson on Monday. So I was just telling Jeff, like, there's 5 games this week, and I really like 3 of them. So I'm nervous. 60% is a little high for me. It's usually more like 1%. But
right.
I really like I really like 2 of these dogs. I don't know if you want to go through it chronologically, but there are 2 dogs on this card I really like. There's one I love. Actually, but we can start with the Colts-Texans game. You know, I was a little surprised that Houston opened like 2.5-point favorite in this game. I would have made this number more like Pick'em or maybe even Colts -1. We've already seen, we had a gentleman bet $30,000 on Houston yesterday. So right now we've got a little bit of a decision on the Colts, but nothing major. Right now we're at Houston -1.5. Colts are coming in off that great win on Sunday Night Football over Tennessee. This really should be a very good game. I mean, I definitely could see this one either way. I'm not going to get involved myself, but I was surprised that Houston opened nearly a 3-point favorite. I think the Colts are clearly a better team than Houston is right now.
So the Colts have won, what, 9 of 10?
Yeah, I think just that one dud against the Jaguars we talked about. I mean, that's really it. And, you know, one thing I've noticed about them, too, they do an excellent job when they have the lead of using the clock. Andrew Luck does a great job of bleeding the clock out, picking up first downs. Frank Reich is a great play caller, and him and Andrew Luck have just found a rhythm together. Indianapolis is a dangerous team, man. If I was one of these two AFC teams sitting at home, I would be rooting to see the Colts get knocked out of this thing immediately. If they were to win, they'd be in Kansas City next week for a divisional matchup. I don't see any team out there in the AFC that the Colts couldn't beat.
They just won in Houston a few weeks ago, and I believe that was the game after losing in Jacksonville, a stinker there. Yeah, it was. But I like the over in this game. Like, I don't think either defense can. I mean, I've been impressed with the Colts defense, but Deshaun Watson is not Blaine Gabbert. But I think there's going to be some points in this game.
Well, I can't disagree with that because I love Andrew Luck. I love Frank Reich on one side, and then on the other side of the ball, DeAndre Hopkins is just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I think I've run out of superlatives for that guy. That guy is unbelievable. Certainly we could see some fireworks the early game Saturday. You know, usually that first wild card game is a total dud of a game. I think last year it was Titans-Chiefs, the game the Chiefs choked away. And then I think the year before that, it was Texans-Raiders, and they both had backup quarterbacks.
Oh, Connor Cook.
Awful. Yeah. Yeah, which is an awful game. But this year, that's not the case. Really, all four of the games look like they're going to be good. And I think, considering it's the first matchup and it's usually the least marquee of the matchups, I think Colts-Texans looks like a very good game.
I agree. I'm excited for this. I'm just excited in general because last year it was such a dud in some of these teams because we had all those quarterback injuries, right? Luck, Watson, Rodgers. Mm-hmm. I just feel there were so many, like it was like the JV playoffs, if you will. We got subjected to Bortles and to Rod Taylor in that horrible game with a little bit of wind in Florida. Neither guy can make a pass or complete a pass.
That was a rough game.
And it kind of stunk. It was just like disappointing. But now we got some awesome teams that I wouldn't even be shocked if either of the wild card teams won it all, right? Like in either conference. I mean, I could see Seattle winning it all in theory. Not likely, but I mean, I just think we have better teams. I mean, look at the wild card teams in the AFC. I think there are great games.
There is a wild card team I think could win it all, Doug, and that's the Chargers.
Yeah.
We can get to that in a second here, but I agree with you. And if you look at the two AFC wild card games last year, Jacksonville Buffalo was a dud, and so was Kansas City Tennessee. The AFC is so much better this year than it was a year ago, and it's so good that even that the Steelers got squeezed out of the playoffs entirely. The AFC playoffs are really top to bottom should be very good this year, very different from a year ago. And I think it's because so many quarterbacks were hurt last year in the AFC.
Right, right. Because I'm going to remember, I don't know if people realize, last year, remember the favorites? There was only one favorite that covered the entire postseason. That was the Patriots at home against the Titans. Dogs went 10-1 against the number.
I remember.
Yeah.
And I hope that the suits at the Westgate don't think we're going to have as good of a playoffs this year as we did last year.
Well,
I don't think we're going to get 10-1 dogs again this year.
Well, 4-0 wild card weekend last year against the number. The year before, 0-4. So I think you can remind the suits how weird last year was with guys like Tyrod Taylor and Blake Bortles reaching the postseason. And this year is going to be more indicative. And I mentioned the short favorites at home. How's this for... Since 2005, wild card weekend, okay? We got the wild card weekend, 2005. Home favorites of less than a field goal, so a half, one, one and a half, two, two and a half. 1-8-1.
Wow.
So I said, my Spidey sense is going off. I might hammer all three of those short dogs in the bonanza.
Then I'll be rooting for you in the bonanza because, if you want to pivot to the next game – I thought Seattle-Dallas, I made this number more like pick 'em. Maybe I said I could see Dallas -1. I took Seattle +3 when the numbers came out on Sunday night.
Nice.
I thought that was not a good number, frankly. I don't see how you could say Dallas should be a full field goal in this game, even with the game in Dallas. I took the Seahawks +3 in that game. And we've seen some money come in mostly on the Cowboys. We had a gentleman bet -2. To win $20,000 on the Cowboys. But right now we're at Dallas -1.5. And I'm with you. I think Seattle wins this game. I don't like it as much as the next game. But I do like Seattle in this spot.
I do, too. And that's mainly because I'm just very anti-Dak. But I will say the Cowboys have burned me quite a bit in this year. And, you know, it could be one of those times where sometimes it's like I feel like Prescott's just like a kind of a hot shooter at the craps table. And I'm a guy looking to play the don't pass line. And he just stays hot and just keeps hitting his points.
This could be a really highly bet game too, man. I mean, this is such a high-profile matchup, the Seahawks and the Cowboys, Saturday night in prime time, Cowboys Stadium. This really could be one of the more heavily bet wildcard games we've had in the last few years. And again, it goes back to what I was saying. This year's playoff, this year's wildcard round is so much better than last year's. It's not even close.
I know. I'm so fired up. So you think that'll have the highest handle of the weekend?
Well, no, the highest handle of the weekend will be the last game. That's what always happens, just because all the parlays and teasers will go to that Philadelphia-Chicago game, so that'll be the highest handle game. But I think Seattle-Dallas will be a very good handle game as well. Just Seattle's got a pretty big following on the West Coast now after the Super Bowl run they had, and obviously I don't have to tell you that the Cowboys have a big following out here. So that should be a very heavily bet game.
So let's go to Sunday. In Chargers-Baltimore, it sounds like you got some strong opinions there.
Well, this is the one I like the most by far out of the whole weekend. You know, I thought this number was going to be like Chargers minus 1.5, maybe even 2. I know some of the guys I work with here said they thought it would be Chargers minus 2.5 with the chance of going to minus 3. I bet Chargers plus 3. Here's how much I like it, DK and Kai. I took plus 3 minus 120.
Oh!
The thing I always tell everybody, don't ever take minus 120 in the NFL. It's hard enough to win at minus 110. I still believe that to be true for the most part. I couldn't help myself. That's how bad of a number I thought Chargers plus 3 was. I really like the Chargers in this spot. I think they win this game. I said on VSiN a couple weeks ago, they asked me for a prediction after the Chargers lost to the Ravens that Saturday night game. I said, here's a prediction for you. The Ravens will win the North. The Chargers will get the 5 seed. They'll play each other. Everybody will bet the Ravens, and the Chargers will win. I said that 2 weeks ago, and I'm sticking to it right now. And so far, everything has been right. Most of the money we've seen has come in on the Ravens. We had a guy bet 10,000 at minus 2. We're at 2.5 right now in Baltimore. But, you know, I really think the wrong team is favored here, and I think the Chargers are going to win this game.
What makes you so bullish? I know the Chargers are better as underdogs than they are as favorites, more reliable, but, I mean, this Ravens squad is dirty in a good way. I mean that, and if the weather's frosty, I don't trust the Chargers.
I thought the Ravens were a little lucky on Sunday, to be honest. I mean, I was rooting for them. We needed the Ravens to win for that AFC North position I mentioned earlier, but I thought they were very fortunate to escape that game against Cleveland. And I just think in terms of roster talent, I don't know that there's any team in the league with more talent than the Chargers do. They have so many good players on both sides of the ball. The one thing that scares me a little bit, you guys know how much I respect John Harbaugh, the Ravens coach. But I don't see how Baltimore can be a 2.5, 3-point favorite in this game. I don't think that's correct.
Dreaded West Coast team playing in the early 1 p.m. time slot.
True. That's a little scary. It's not the best time slot for this game if you're a Charger supporter. Cannot disagree with you there. I still think the Chargers, at worst, should be a pick'em in this game.
Fair point. But, my stat's certainly interesting there. And I like the favorite here. I like the Bears. I do not trust Nick Foles. I want my money back betting against Nick Foles. And I think this is the opportunity to get that.
Yeah, and I think this is a really interesting game, too. I mean, like I said several times already, these matchups are great this week. And we did have one guy bet Eagles plus 6 for 20,000 a couple days ago, so we're at 5.5 right now. I do think there's going to be a lot of teaser and moneyline parlay action to the Bears, but not as much as there normally would be in a playoff weekend, just because the public would rather tease a 7-point favorite down to pick 'em than tease, let's say, the Chargers up or the Seahawks up. So there aren't the obvious teaser spots on the board of the public players, and there's not the obvious money line parlay spots on the board for the public players because there aren't any other big favorites other than the Bears. But I still think we'll see a decent amount of parlay liability to Chicago by the time this thing kicks off.
I don't know, man. This Bears defense is nasty. And what if the Eagles, like, what's their strength? Like, I don't, like, Foles, I saw some ridiculous stat on third down. Like, his QB rating, his completion percentage is just off the charts. Like, off the charts. But it's like, other than that, like, I don't understand what's so special about this Eagles team.
Well, people will talk themselves into the Eagles because they won the Super Bowl last year, because Nick Foles had those two great playoff performances, the Super Bowl MVP. But I know what you're saying. I think Chicago is just clearly a much better team than Philadelphia. I still think they would have been better off playing the Vikings, though, guys. The Vikings, Kirk Cousins, I'd take my chances against him.
All right. By the way, you mentioned your pick with Mr. Musburger. Vikings did not deliver. Yeah. How did you fare? How did you close the year?
You know, I finished the year 10-7, which I would argue is pretty good when you're picking on Wednesday afternoon. Not as good as 11-6, but you know, Brent Musburger actually finished in the money. I think he finished tied for 58th place, if I remember correctly. So he had Mr. Musburger had a great season. I don't know that my 10-7 contributed much to it, but he deserves credit for a great year. And let me also mention the Pigskin Junkies. They finished tied for second, and I sent them an email a couple days ago to congratulate them. And one of the members, Jared Larson, he actually responded to the email by saying, "How you doing, Mr. Director?" He said he was a big fan of our podcast, so I told him I wanted to shout out the Pigskin Junkies, Jared Larson and Scott Panza. Hopefully I got that right. Those two guys, they had a great year, and they finished tied for second. And I actually just got the mock-up of their novelty check that we're going to be issuing them this weekend for their excellent performance in the Super Contest.
Well, hopefully I helped, too, by their allowing them to fade all my picks on the Bonanza.
No, my picks weren't much better on this show, at least. But you got to give credit to these guys. A field of that size, these guys finishing that well in this pool. You know, the winner went 5-0 on Sunday to steal it away from everybody. Personal Gourmet. He went 5-0 on Sunday to win the thing.
So grand prize is what?
$1.42 million, I believe, was the final number. Yeah, it's pretty decent payday. Not bad.
I'd say. It is the premier contest, so congrats to those. Oh. You mentioned the check. I finished, I think, third in a college contest when I was out there living. I was disappointed I did not get the novelty check. I was very disappointed at that.
Well, you know that my claim to fame for the long time was that I won that contest in 2009, the Leroy's contest.
Yeah, that was mine, yeah.
And I went over to the Leroy's offices to get my check, and they gave me like a regular size check. And then they had me pose for a picture with the novelty check, and it wasn't actually filled in. Like, they just had me hold this giant check with nothing on it.
Oh,
and then
come
on. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll fill in the graphics later. So I was like, okay, that's cool. And I never got that picture. I don't know. Somebody must have that picture somewhere.
That's just criminal.
But we'll have four this week. We have the winner, Personal Gourmet. He gets his check for $1.42 million. And then the winner of the Super Contest Gold, there can only be one. He gets a check for $640,000. And then the two second-place finishers, they tied for second, so they split second and third-place money. Pigskin Junkies, one of those two. They're pulling in a cool $409,000. It's pretty good money.
I'd say. Well, good for them, and thanks for the loyal listenership to anyone, and especially those who are performing well in the contest. But let's pick some games straight ahead after a word from one of our sponsors.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Rough week 17 for your guy here. Here's a PSA to all those who like to do middling. When you take a position on a game, you probably shouldn't take a nap for 3 hours and miss the first half of that game. That was doomed for me.
You know, if there was ever a 10 a.m., 1 o'clock Eastern NFL time to sleep, it was this Sunday. It seemed like all the high-profile games were in the afternoon. So I can't blame you for catching a little cat nap, but probably should have taken care of those middles before you fell asleep, DK.
I was only supposed to take like a 30-minute nap because I've had all these early SportsCenter hits, especially with Christmas. We have really early SportsCenters sometimes, like 7 a.m., 8 a.m., and I did a couple pops during the week, and then obviously these games late Friday night, heavily involved in that Syracuse-West Virginia game. So I've just been burning the candle on both ends and all those games on just throughout the weekend. And so Sunday I had a SportsCenter hit in the morning. I stayed at late. I did a live radio hit at work Saturday night at 12:45 a.m. And then had to tape some plays for Peter Burns' show Sunday morning. And I just needed some Z's. And boy, did I get it. Woke up, sent you a text like, oh, I made the mistake of taking a nap. This is not good.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, the Giants, I know you had the New York Giants, Kai's beloved. I mean, I still can't believe they gave that up at the end of the game there.
Well, I will say this. I would have essentially broken even on my four big plays with the money line parlay. But fourth and 15, Cole Beasley, I had a five-team money line parlay. Patriots, no problem. Chiefs, no problem. A little bit of a sweat with Seattle. Two block punts. I mean, just insane. That hurt by 13.5. But Seattle wins. Pittsburgh wins outright. But then the Giants did not. And that I got a little greedy putting the Giants in there.
I'd say that was a sweat on Seattle. I know my brother texted me after that game, and he was telling me that one of his buddies, Mike, won his survivor pool or finished tied for first in his survivor pool with the Seahawks in week 17. I was like, I bet you if you had a survivor pool that came down to that, you would have considered it a sweat.
Yeah, too bad I'm out like week three or whatever this is.
Yeah. No, I think if you had a survivor pool, that was definitely a sweat, but yeah, that was a goofy game with the plays that Arizona was making on special teams, certainly.
Well, so I took a big hit. You had the parlay, the Week 17 correlated parlay. The Vikings did not get there. The Giants did not get there, although you were ahead of the line move, so there's something to be said about that. But you had a nice Derrick Henry
they'll pay
prop.
They'll pay me absolutely nothing for being ahead of the line moves. But, yes, thanks for acknowledging that. That was the Prince of Props. He gave me Derrick Henry over rushing yards. It was a nice winner there. The Prince back, getting back to business here for me. I need that, man.
So I got to do the math, but it's not good. So we got big games coming up. Are you ready to do plays for this weekend?
I'll just, the numbers that I actually bet them at are gone, but I'll just pick them anyway for the bonanza. And then the Prince is going to circle the wagons and give me some plays later that I'll tweet out. You know, I actually had his folks in the book yesterday. They're Ohio State fans. They were in town, and they came over to watch the Rose Bowl here at the Superbook. So that was a privilege to host them.
Do they? Did you channel your Mr. McDowell? And when you met the father of the Prince, did you say, I don't know whether to shake your hand? Kiss it. Frankly, I feel like breakdancing.
I should have. No, I was running around like an idiot yesterday. I didn't have any time for any great Coming to America references. I certainly wish
he's got his own money.
Great. That's a great one. No. Just all I did was I said I wish the Prince had been out there with him, with the King and the Queen.
Yeah.
That would have been nice. But certainly he'll come up with something this weekend. And you guys already know what I like. I'm not making any secrets about it. But you know what? I don't think it even matters because I feel like you're going to come with another monster play, and it's just going to render all my picks irrelevant, man.
Who knows? Maybe I just take a knee and wave the white flag and just say
I don't think you can't take a knee when you're behind. What are you, James Franklin?
Yeah, I was about to say, you can give up. You can start. You can do what Ole Miss did against Alabama and just say, hey, let's just take the L.
Nah, that's no fun.
No, that's not in my DNA either.
I know it's not.
What was I going to say? So you're on the tee box because I lost more money last week.
Yeah, I can go. I'll just give you, I mean, you guys already know what I like, but I'll give it to you anyway. I'm going to play, I'll just do it like this. I'll play Seattle. I'll do +1.5. I'll do it for a dime. Okay. I bet it at +3, but I think they're going to win the game. So I'll take the 1.5. That's fine.
All right, my first play is going to – I'm going to do something – I don't know. It's like, you know those, like, you just keep doubling up until you win kind of things?
That's a risky strategy, but continue. Continue.
Is every half going to go under?
Probably not, I would think. The
right?
Math,
I mean,
says I would.
You got eight halves here, right?
Yeah.
And I just think with defense now, it's just non-existent in so many many ways.
There's some pretty good defenses playing on Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Saturday game. Well, actually, there's pretty good defense playing on Saturday, too. But there's some very good defenses playing in those two games on Sunday.
I guess. I just feel non-existent is a wrong word because obviously there's some stud defenders and stud defenses. I just feel like, I don't know, man, these quarterbacks and these offenses are too evolved and you just have these penalties now with pass interference and, frankly, the D can score. I just feel like overs are the way to go. And I know that sounds very square, but, I mean, we know how painful it is to bet unders these days.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I find betting on the NFL in general painful, but certainly unders are particularly painful, special kind of pain.
So I'm going to play the first half over in Houston and Indy, and then maybe Twitter will have some activity after that. But let's start with 5K on the over first half.
Over 24 for 5K. All right. Well, that gives me some action in the first game.
Yeah, there you go.
I already got my action in the second game. I'm going to go to the third game, and you guys know that how I feel about the Chargers. I'll take the Chargers plus 2.5. I'll do that for a dime as well.
All right, so LAC plus 2.5. How are you in the L.A., calling L.A. thing and all that?
I almost call them San Diego in every interview I do. And I do a lot of interviews, so think about what I'm saying. I always go the Chargers. Los Angeles Chargers doesn't sound right.
It
doesn't sound right at all. And when we're at work and we're making lines and we're talking about this or that, we always just call them San Diego.
So I think
it feels right, man.
We didn't talk. Oh yeah, no doubt. We didn't talk about it at the beginning of the pot or early. But I think the Bears are my favorite play by far. I really like them.
Yeah, I like the Bears too. But I'll give you the floor here.
I think this could be a middle game where this gets us back into it.
Okay.
Let's go 20 large on – do we have a max bet? I can't remember.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm sorry. I just dropped the phone. 20 large. I don't know. I thought we did have a max bet, but I'm pretty sure we've already exceeded it anyway. Like, I thought that the max bet was supposed to be 5.
Right.
Does that sound familiar?
But – I know. I don't think. I just think there was buyback. Like I had to basically re up. So I owe Kai's son. Kai, can we get a name here? I feel bad now, but I was thinking about it the other day.
Makai.
I'm paying for Makai's college at this point, but in order to get more revenue, it's like a rebuy in a poker tournament. I just have to contribute. So I owe a lot of money. Let's just put it that way. Kai will be getting an envelope.
Big number.
Is it like the remember that Sopranos episode when the guy that owned the sporting goods store owed Tony all that money from their poker game?
Doug's going to be selling his son's SUV, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he sells the SUV to Meadow or to Tony, and Tony gives it to Meadow. That's a really good episode, man. I think Lawrence Taylor makes a cameo in that episode.
I do not remember that specific episode, but I obviously remember the show and watched it a lot. I don't remember. I thought the Bada Bing became like more of a bookmaking play. Didn't he start taking bets there?
I just remember they had a poker game, and like I remember Sill like went nuts and was throwing a fit, and Lawrence Taylor was there, and the sporting goods store guy was like a friend of Meadows. Or was the dad of Meadow's friend from school. And I think he went to high school with Tony and Artie, the chef.
See, I remember the chef. I remember the chef
and
his financial issues.
Yeah.
At the restaurant.
Man, I got to rewatch some of that show. That's a quality program.
That guy was a classic degenerate. He gave away everything.
Yeah.
That was classic.
Remember they called them boxes of ZD. Like, oh, yeah, he's approved for another $5.
Yes, I do.
All right, well, next season we're going to get Bob Lee to revoice some more drops.
Please.
And that'll be one of them. I got a good friend who does voices really well. He would always imitate Junior's voice pretty well.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, if you want to just keep digging yourself deeper and deeper.
No, we're going to hit this middle, and we're going to come back and be like, Oh, my gosh.
20 boxes of ziti. We're putting it in the kitchen right now.
I want to be there when Kai's son graduates from Harvard and DK signs the last check for the 4 years of tuition. I'd like to be there for that if possible.
We're getting reckless this postseason, so that's very, very much a possibility of what could happen here.
All right, fair enough.
I'm done. Those are my two plays for now. Those are my two plays.
Okay.
The other underdogs. I think I'm going to have to give out some SportsCenter picks. I'm obviously leaning towards both dogs on Saturday.
We don't. I will say this. We don't take 20 grand on in-game. Just so you know, I mean that's a pretty big in-game wager.
Well,
we'll take it pre-game, but we'll bend the rules here for the sake of the show.
Offshore websites will. Chris and Pinnacle do.
Yeah. Well.
At an NFL playoff game.
20,000 is a lot on an in-game bet. I mean, maybe for the playoffs, depending on the player, but not just to anybody.
Well, I'm special. So
you are. No, that's true. You're true.
Question for you. In terms of futures, anything like that stands out? I will say, what was it? 4 of the last 15 Super Bowl champs have been the betting favorite entering the postseason. So the Saints around plus 200, plus 225. And 7 of the last 15 Super Bowl champs were either the favorite or the second favorite, and that includes Kansas City this year. So 7 out of 15, about half.
Yeah, and we're in very good shape in the future book, actually, guys. We do very well on really all the teams that look like they have a chance to win. We have an exceptionally high win on Kansas City. That'd be great for us if the Chiefs could win. The only team that I think can realistically win the Super Bowl that we would lose on is Chicago. We would take a loss on the Bears. We would also take a loss on Seattle, but it's just hard for me to believe they could win 3 consecutive road games and then win the Super Bowl. I don't see that happening. But even those two losses, Seattle and Chicago, they're not disastrously bad. So we're in very good shape. And we're in good shape on both Alabama and Clemson. So we're starting the new year with some really good future positions here.
I will say of opening weekend teams, of all those teams playing this weekend, I would say the Bears, in my eyes, have the best chance to win it all.
I'd say the Bears or the Chargers. The Chargers just have a tougher path because they've got to start on the road, whereas the Bears have the first game at home. They really should win. And there's really no reason why they can't beat the Rams next weekend. The Rams, we talked about it, but it looks like they may have peaked a little too early. And there's really no reason why Chicago couldn't go in there and beat the Rams next weekend. That'll probably be like 50% Bears fans, by the way, if that is the game.
And to put a close on the bonanza, just a heads up, I think we might have a teaser on Sunday night before kickoff with next week's games. I don't know if I like any of the teasers. We might go Bears to next week's early lines. Ah, that's some advanced gambling right there. Because I don't believe the Westgate Superbook takes open teasers, right? I don't believe we can do that today.
No, not open teasers. But before we get out of here, let me give you guys one of my favorite lucky. It wasn't me, but a customer had a $20,000 teaser. Do you guys remember the divisional playoff game between the Saints and the 49ers? When Harbaugh was there, it was the year that the 49ers lost the NFC Championship game to the Giants.
I remember that game, but not the Saints game.
We had a guy teased, I'm trying to get you all the right numbers, but he teased the Saints up to +4 through 0, and the Niners beat him by 4. So he got a refund on his bet, despite the fact that the first leg of the teaser had been that Steelers-Broncos wild card game, the Tim Tebow game.
Sure, the walk-off.
He had teased the Steelers down like under 3, so he basically just needed the Steelers to win. They lose that game to the Broncos. That was the late Sunday afternoon wild card game. And he teased it to the Saturday divisional game where the Saints lost by 4 and he got a push. So he got his money back. Because in Nevada, there's no such thing as a one-team teaser. So if you push either leg of your two-team teaser, you get a refund, even if the other one lost. I always remember that bet. I always thought that was the luckiest push I've ever seen.
That is incredible. I knew about that for teasers. I always forget that, though. That is always so fascinating to me. You don't throw away your ticket even if you lose one leg of it. You have a chance to find that needle in the haystack.
It was 20-some thousand. I don't remember everything. This was about 7 years ago, but it was over 20 grand. And the first leg was the Steelers at Denver. the famous game, I think it was Tebow to Demaryius Thomas on the first play of overtime. And the gentleman got his $20,000 back.
That's a nice win. That's a nice W.
Yeah.
That's found money right there.
That's found money, all right.
All right, my man. Well, good stuff as always. Really good catching up. Happy New Year to you. And let's see what happens. Should be an eventful weekend.
Probably the best football weekend of the year when you get the four playoff games and the national championship game of college football. So it should be awesome. And then we'll talk next week. We can recap the championship game and preview the divisional round.
Sounds good, bud. Have a good one.
All right, guys. Take care.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
All right, thanks to Mr. Director John Murray. Kai, Confessions of a Non-Gambler. We're going to have to call you a Confessions of a Rich Man.
Yeah, I wanted you to kind of go in. I have something else jotted down, but I wanted you to go in further on your next week's teaser. What exactly, just give me a little breakdown on what exactly you're talking about.
Okay, so we talked about teasers all the time, right? You can adjust the point spread, 6, 6.5, 7, and depending on what number you choose, what value, you have different payouts. So it's just ways to bet, right? You can pick two teams. If two teams are 6-point favorites, you can tease the favorite down to pick. You have to hit both, but it ends up becoming like an even money bet. That's not the same as a two-team parlay. So they're basically parlays with adjusted odds and adjusted spreads.
Okay.
Just different ways to do it. You can go, if it's a 6-point teaser and an underdog of +2.5 can be up to 8.5. And they're just, you just get to manipulate the point spread. Now, common ways to do teasers are around the key numbers of 3, 4, 6, and 7. So what I typically have done in the past is tease a 6-point favorite down to pick. Well, on this betting weekend, there's only one, right, in that neighborhood, right, because there's only four games. So Chicago is a 5.5, 6-point favorite. You can tease them down to pick. Now, I could pick another game on the board like Seattle +7.5 going from 1.5 to 7.5 and two-team teaser. But I may do that ultimately. But what you can do sometimes if you're kind of resourceful, like maybe choose Alabama as well. So the minimum amount of teaser you can do is 2, and you can do up to as many, 15, 20, whatever.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So 2-team, 3-team, they obviously have different payouts, much like 2-team, 3-team, and 4-team parlays do. So since in the Bonanza, we can't do Alabama-Clemson game, we'd have to do one of these games. So I would do Chicago pick and tease it to another team
next weekend. Gotcha.
When
gotcha.
Some of the spreads are already posted, like this is an NFC game, so maybe all the AFC lines will already be out. So sometimes in the people who have bookies and offshore accounts, you can do open teasers. Like, let's just say I want to do an open teaser. So you have one blank spot and then you pick the game that night. And then if you hit it, you have an open teaser. Like you just have to find another.
You can wait months
to do it.
Okay.
Like you can close it out next year at the Super Bowl or whatever. Maybe next year, week 3, if some bookie will let you do that, but you have a kind of a open ticket. Under Nevada gaming, they can't do that. You have to have an actual bet ticket, and you can't do open bets. It's like an IOU, so to speak. So that's what an open teaser is, and so I'm just trying to figure out within our Bonanza guidelines a game I might like. Now, I would have to get that second. Because we can't do open teasers for the Bonanza, we have to use the Westgate lines. Like whenever I do the tweet, I have to take the line that's at the Westgate at that time. So if it's the Patriots -8 or whoever it is, and I have to take mine down to -2 if I do a 6-point teaser.
Gotcha.
So you got to use your board, use the board and all the options depending on your intent. But maybe I'll pick another. You can do over unders. I just think there's more value to do a side. Now I don't. I mean, it's not. I'm not the only person. Obviously, there's more value to do a side 6 points than an over under of like 48 to 42 or something like that. There's just better value with those key numbers on a side, whether it be Houston or Indy or whatever. You got another one, bud?
Yeah, well, this is kind of just, I know that the backdoor cover, in essence, what it means, like the Huskies, you know, they came back at the last minute to cover the spread.
Right.
But I guess my question.
That was the definition of a backdoor cover, considering they were losing 28-3 or whatever it is.
Right. And Twitter was going crazy. I woke up to this morning. But how does that work within the live betting space? Now, when do you get, my question is, when do you get the opportunity to change or, you know, put that bet down? Does it have to be before the third quarter?
Every bet in every game you can make during a timeout. So and then the point spread changes as the game evolves, right? So if there's points scored or there's just time run off the clock, every timeout there's a new point spread. And that's just live wagering at its finest. So just like this week, like Mr. Director was talking how he got Seattle plus 3. The line is down to 1.5. So even throughout the course of the week, there's a new line, right? And then as the game evolves, whether it be 2nd and 7, the quarterback calls a timeout, and nothing has happened, so to speak, the point spread will be available during that timeout. If they score or whatever, just like their second half lines, you can make a bet every timeout throughout any game.
Wow.
NBA, baseball, every half inning, whatever. So there's always action potential and there's opportunities. Now, as Murray was saying, that they don't have limits like 20 grand. You can do that before the game, but you can't do it in game because there is perception that there's more vulnerability in live wagering than there is in the regular market because they trust the sharps, the computer models, whatever it may be, the power ratings that set the lines at Houston minus 1.5 against Indy. Whereas when you go into a commercial break, now there's computers and algorithms that determine the live line based on the game line, but there are people out there who really study substitution patterns in the NBA, like when Russell Westbrook goes to the bench or when LeBron goes to the bench, where there's opportunities. Jeez. And just the fact that it's a very nuanced sort of game, meaning the betting angle, that the market hasn't matured fully yet like the regular betting market has. So the live wagering, that the fact that they have to post point spreads in such quick time because it's a timeout. All right, we're going to break. Got to post a line right now.
That's incredibly fascinating.
So, right now, look, there's juice on these point spreads. There's always an advantage for the house, but just given how, I mean, I'm not saying new, but the market is not as solidified as the regular conventional point spread market is. Make sense?
No, makes perfect sense. And it just makes the game so much more exciting when you have that.
And that's what they talk about, baseball potentially being the biggest benefactor from this legalization, because baseball's
it's
hurting for ratings. And I just think the speed of the game lends itself to betting, right? Between half innings, also like every batter you can bet, is this guy going to make it out, get a hit, whatever, strikeout? You can do that, whereas like the lag time of LeBron getting fouled and going to the free throw line, there's not enough lag time to bet whether he's going to make 0, 1, or 2 free throws.
Right.
There's just more time between batters. Or in the half inning, if Mike Trout's up third, you can bet on Mike Trout's at bat, whereas you can't bet advanced. I mean, you could. Hey, next time LeBron gets fouled, will he make 0? And if he doesn't get fouled, then no action. So you could do stuff like that. I just think baseball, just the nature of this, it's actually a nice fit. The betting component, what betting brings to it, and the speed of baseball. But that's just my personal opinion.
No, you make a great case for it. That's going to be interesting.
Totally. And we're a ways away. But anyways, Happy New Year, bud. Good
Same
to be back
to you,
on the
man.
Pod.
Yeah.
And let's try to get a winning bonanza weekend. What do you say? Well, although you just want more money.
I mean,
a little Makai.
Who doesn't, man?
That's,
I mean,
true.
20 boxes of ZD. Come on.
Let's get those boxes of ZD. All right, that was a little bit lengthy of a pod, but obviously we had to discuss college and pro. So thanks to everyone who, rang in the new year with us here on the Behind the Bets podcast. We'll get you back here next week.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.